move, going deep, speed race. He's got Hill! He's got Hill!
From the Baptist Health Studios, inside the Baptist Health Training Complex, this is Drive Time with Travis Wingfield.
He's got it! Miami is in the playoffs!
What is up, Dolphins, and welcome to the Drive Time Podcast. I am your host, Travis Wingfield, and on today's show, we are having fun with mock drafts. Our first mock draft roundup, we'll take a look at some of the most popular names in the draft community, who they're mocking to your Miami Dolphins, and what that might mean for us in the draft. Plus, we are going to talk about some concerns we might have on the roster and how to address those. We'll also take a look at the edge group, Darius Robinson, Chop Robinson, Leatu Latu. We'll break down those three's game, and we'll also explain to you how the Dolphins' current roster creates the options for flexibility throughout the rest of free agency and the draft. All of that and a heck of a lot more from the Baptist Health Studios inside the Baptist Health Training Complex. This is the Drive Time Podcast. Mock draft roundup season. Let's go ahead and kick this thing off with Daniel Jeremiah, the GOAT of the draft community, who has Miami taking at pick number 21, the all offensive lineman, center guard, tackle, Graham Barton out of Duke. This is from his top 50 profile. Barton started as a left tackle during his final 3 years at Duke. Prior to that, he started 5 games at center, and that's where I see him playing at the next level. He has ideal size for the position, an average length, and pass protection. He is quick out of a stance, plays with knee bend, and has the agility to redirect. He does struggle against power rusher. He doesn't play long-armed, exposes his chest, and gives ground. Fortunately, he loses slowly on most occasions, allowing the quarterback time to get the ball out. He's a technician in the running game. He always hits his landmarks with his hands and on down blocks before sinking and driving with his lower half. He is excellent on combo blocks, and he's under control as a puller. Overall, I see Barton as an athletic center with the ability to survive a tackle if needed. And I don't think much needs to be added to Jeremiah's blurb there. His top 50 tends to give you pretty much the entire breakdown of each player. He just told you what kind of player he is there. The fact that he's seen a lot of football from those extra positions excites me. And of course, we've talked about the short shuttle threshold of 4.47, where Barton came in his pro day at 4.4 flat. And again, the beauty of our offensive line, which might be one of the deepest in the league now, because I would feel good about Kendall Lamb if he had to start a couple of games. I would feel good about Keon Smith if he starts a couple of games at tackle. I feel pretty good about Rob Jones and Liam Eichenberg in those reserve roles on the interior offensive line as well, not to mention Isaiah Wynn. We'll see how all that shakes out, but Miami has a bunch of guys that can do multiple things. And the nice part about that is when you have so many guys that can play those multiple spots, it opens up your options in terms of who you can take. It doesn't have to be a tackle or a guard. It can be either or. More on that later on in the show. So Matt Miller from ESPN did a 7-round mock draft, and he actually gave the Dolphins 2 players that I don't think will be there in those spots, but we press on. 21, offensive tackle J.C. Latham out of Alabama. I just don't see that happening. I mean, here's his blurb on that. Salary cap concerns have forced the Dolphins to remake their offensive line, and Latham could fit well. He's a handful for defensive linemen at 343 pounds and has excellent grip strength. Latham was a 2-year starter at right tackle for Alabama, allowed 2 sacks, but has potential to play either tackle or guard in the pros. He would likely push right guard Robert Jones out of the lineup as a rookie, he says. And who knows, you know, we don't have a starting lineup right now, so that's kind of, it is what it is. But Latham, I don't think makes it to pick 21 at all. He is big, he's strong, he's athletic, and those guys typically go off the board earlier than your top 20 picks. 55, center Zach Frazier from West Virginia. A late season injury to Connor Williams, who's now a free agent, affected the team down the stretch. Yeah, it did. Frazier's a top 32 prospect on my board, but teams aren't in a hurry to prioritize centers in the draft just yet. The 4-year starter was a state wrestling champion in high school, and he is the perfect Mike McDaniel zone offense fit that needs mobility in the middle of the offensive line. Plus, Frazier has the tools to start at guard or center. My argument there for Mr. Miller would be that Aaron Brewer is a pretty damn good center who just got signed here, and I'm not sure that you want to move him off that spot because Brewer's best at center, which then begs the question about Graham Barton, but I think Barton can play guard more so than Frazier could, so I kind of like the idea of going Barton over Frazier, but Frazier at pick 55 would be fantastic value. He finishes up with defensive tackle Christian Boyd from Northern Iowa at pick 158. Safety out of Auburn, Jalen Simpson at pick 184. A cornerback from Mississippi State, DeCamarion Richardson at 198. 28, and then in the seventh round, 241, linebacker Jontre Hunter from Georgia State. And I gotta tell you guys, I don't have any notes on any of those players at this stage of the draft process. Field Yates did a two-round mock draft and gave Miami Byron Murphy at the 21st pick out of Texas. The Dolphins just watched Christian Wilkins depart in free agency, but Murphy has some traces of Wilkins in his game as a disruptive interior defender. Murphy has had a great season in 2023 with 5 sacks, but the stats are far from the full story of his impact. He has the unique ability to torque and hold up against the run, and he makes life easier for the players around him. Doing these is always kind of funny to me because, like, I'm just providing voices from other people besides myself on the podcast, but I mean, look, this is going to sound so conceited, but these guys don't know the Dolphins the way I know the Dolphins. Like, the whole salary cap concerns force you to remake your offensive line. That's not what happened there. Connor Williams is not healthy, and Robert Hunt got $20 million a year. That's not what smart teams do. So I disagree with that whole sentiment there. And Yeah. Pick 55 for Field Yates is Christian Haynes from UConn, and I freaking love this player. So speaking of Robert Hunt, lost him to free agency, opening a significant gap on the offensive line. Enter Haynes, an experienced guard who has 49 starts, who plays with a serious edge to his game. I think he'd be an ideal fit in Miami's offense. And that, to me, is really an ideal draft there, Field. So congrats to Field Yates for getting it exactly right, in my opinion. No, it's not the premium positions, but I think you're hard-pressed to find two players at those two spots who could come in and play right away and be serious, serious contributors for you in 2024. They both have a ton of college experience. They both technically are at the two spots where you probably don't know who your starter is right now. Haynes is a right guard, and Murphy's a 0-3 technique on the defensive line, and their tape is really, 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 really good. In fact, it almost kind of tracks with the free agency concept I discussed on the Wednesday podcast, because these positions can get overlooked a smidge. You can tend to get exceptional value later on in the draft than you can with some positions. Like, Haynes is definitely a top 50 player for me, but the interior offensive line designation maybe does bump him down the board a tad. And then with defensive tackle like Murphy, same deal. Easily a top 20 player for me in the class, but he might be on the board there because of defensive tackle position designation. We talked about Murphy at length yesterday, but my God, man, I continue to go back to Christian Haynes. 175-10 split is 90th percentile, so you know he gets off the football quickly. 33-inch vertical is 95th percentile, so that's where he gets all those, you know, he tends to get under guys at his 6'2.5" frame that he plays with. That's short for football standards, right? But 317 pounds, I think he could play 5 pounds heavier or lighter if he was asked to, and Robert Hunt played last year at 315 pounds. But that vertical and the, just look at the man's quads and his hamstrings. Like, imagine if Tyreek Hill were an offensive line. You've seen Tyreek Hill's legs, right? Like, he's a big dude in that regard. And Christian Haynes has a similar build, but he's not like 200 pounds or 180 pounds, whatever Tyreek Hill is. What is Tyreek Hill? How does he weigh? I'm probably way off on that, aren't I? Googling it. Doesn't tell me on here. 190? Yeah, 191 pounds for Tyreek Hill. So imagine Tyreek Hill's legs at 190 and now put it into a 315-pound offensive lineman. That's basically what Christian Haynes is, and he just runs through people with that ability. And he has lead blocks for the orbit motion, like, which is a slow-developing outside play where he beats the back and the pursuit defender outside the numbers. There's an excellent relationship there between timing of his hands, feet, and playing from behind his pads with that low pad level because of that build and his technique. I think this is a power/athletic type of player that would flourish in this system. And at pick 55 is a Julio Rodriguez 450-foot home run. I love this draft. Great value. I think both players have room to grow, and I think both can start for their respective teams week one. Great job by GM Field Yates on this mock draft. We'll end here in our opening segment with Lance Zierlein, because it takes me into my round one prospect preview. And number 21, Edge Chop Robinson from Penn State. He writes, with Jalen Phillips and Bradley Chubb both rehabbing from season-ending injuries, it won't surprise me if the Dolphins grab a veteran edge rusher in free agency. They did that already with Shaq Barrett and draft Chop Robinson. Raw, but ridiculously explosive. This Penn State product has immense upside with more tutelage. And I can see the idea there that Lance has in terms of going in the direction of a Chop Robinson, because of the upside and because you already have three guys that, you know, come hopefully by like October are all playing, right? With Phillips, Chubb and then Shaq, who is healthy going into the season. But I can see the idea thinking there of like, while those guys develop or while those guys are still in their prime, whatever, Chop can develop and kind of become the breakout player in 2 or 3 years. But I think that there's better options there because you want someone that can play right away, right? And quite frankly, we'll talk about this in the second segment, there's two guys in that position who I just think are better players and better prospects than Chop. So we'll get into that here in just 1 second. I want to finish up the first segment with this idea, because the Stephon Diggs news shook the airwaves, didn't it? I mean, they extended him last year. They extended him last offseason. And the situation becomes so tenuous that you decide to trade him. And yeah, the Texans will absorb the rest of that money owed, but the Bills already paid him over $31 million in bonuses as part of that new extension, and you can't move that money. It's dead money. So Buffalo will chop that up into like $17 million dead dollars each of the next 2 years that they can't use. They will get salary relief in the future because the Texans do take on the rest of the contract, but like that's basically two premier players that you have at like $18 million is a premier player, right? Per year. They're going to have one of those players that's not a player. It's just a you know, David Justice and Moneyball. That's what the Yankees think of you. They're paying you to play against them this year. David Justice, like, that's not good. And there's no chance that Buffalo is done right now at the top of the receiver room because it's Curtis Samuel, Khalil Shakur, and Matt Collins. I actually really like Samuel's game and Khalil Shakur's game, but that receiving room is not scaring anybody right now. They'll get somebody else. You know they will, whether it's the pick in the 20s, whether it's a veteran trade they make, they're going to pick somebody up. But I refuse to believe that move was made without the plan to reinforce the group. But it's still wild because eating dead money to depart a receiver who's produced 5,400 yards and 37 touchdowns in 4 seasons for you, all 4 years a Pro Bowler, and 1 first-team All-Pro nod. That is crazy. Absolutely crazy. And I wanted to go ahead and mention this because I saw a tweet from Alan Pupar. For anyone thinking Buffalo is done because Diggs is gone, just consider the 2023 season. First 9 games, Diggs, 70 catches, 834 yards, 7 touchdowns, a record of 5-4. Their last 8 games, Diggs, 37 grabs, 349 yards, and 1 touchdown, record 6-2. Just saying. Well, here's what I'm just saying. You know the game better than that, right? 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 You sure about that? You sure about that's why? Because, like, bro, do you understand the impact of having Stephon Diggs on the field? Do you understand what the Bills did? Like, I know this is beyond conceivable for, you know, certain podcasters, but like when the Bills fired Ken Dorsey and went to Joe Brady, they completely revamped their offense. They went RPO, one read, pitch, pop, and go. And that's why Josh Allen stunk down the stretch. He wasn't even a good player down the stretch. Now he beat the crap out of us because he always does. But that shift was not something that Josh Allen was familiar with. And I know people that have talked about this from that building where it was a round peg, square hole fit there for Josh Allen in the offense. So what do they do? They went to James Cook in their running game, and he tore teams up in the running game. There was a huge shift in philosophical approach when the offensive coordinator change happened. And if you can't fathom that and you're just going to throw these stats out there, I'm just telling you, remember, there's a lot of people that like that podcast. Remember what you're getting if you're going to that source for information. Like, you're getting a very 101 look at the game. So there you go. That's the Stephon Diggs news. We're going to come back on the other side and get right back into the prospects I want to talk about here, including 3 edge players I think are going to be in play for the Dolphins at pick 21. All of that is next. Drive Time Podcast, your host, Travis Wingfield, brought to you by AutoNation. We've done receiver, we've done offensive line, we've done defensive tackle. Let's go ahead and do another spot here from my own evaluations, my own draft notes, and talk about the edge group, another one that I think offers a bunch of really, really damn good players, especially early on in this year's draft. And this one will be among 3 guys for me because Dallas Turner, gone, right? We all agree there. Jared Verse, we all agree there too. He's gone, right? Those are top 10, top 15 talents that should come off the board accordingly. So I have 3 guys I want to talk about. But first, before I get into that, let's talk about the Dolphins' makeup of their defense. And one thing I want to tell you guys is, like, I know this time of year there's lots of draft prospect talk, and I love that. I love talking about the players that the Dolphins could draft. But I just want to go ahead and let you guys know that my approach will always be to provide more Dolphins content within the episode than just here's 20 names that the Dolphins could potentially draft in a month, because I think that's not there's a place for it, but I don't think it's good to have every podcast be that because you want to come listen to some Dolphins information and Dolphins talk. So I'll always do draft talk during April, but I always will also incorporate some Dolphins for sure content, right? Like draft prospects are hopeful, maybe a potential guy you might add, but I always want to put concrete stuff in every episode. So just have that in mind as you check out the draft podcast here on Drive Time. So first, I do think that this position group requires a little bit of a preamble with regards to what you should look for. I go back to the scouting combine this year ahead of Chris Greer's press conference or media availability or just chat with us in general. And there was discussions about like, who's going to replace Christian Wilkins? What position? And it's like, well, Christian's a three technique. And the question back was, what does that mean? Again, you know, consider your sources of the content you check out. And so I think there's just this giant misconception with football fans because, again, I've seen different, you know, writers say that they run a 3-4 or 4-3. Oh, here's the difference between a 3-4 and a 4-3. It took me 6 years to figure it out, but here it is. And the truth is, it's neither, man. Like, this is available to anybody. You can look this up. The Dolphins were in the 3-4 last year 16% of the time. They were in the 4-3 2.8% of the time. So I'll round it up and call it 19%. So your defense is in those looks less than one-fifth of the time. And then you have your nickel, dime, quarter, half dollar, dollar. All those packages do is identify the number of defensive backs. Your 3-4 and 4-3, obviously four defensive backs, right? Nickel, we know that's five. Dime is six. Quarter is seven. Half dollar is eight. Dollar is nine. So you can play as many defensive backs as you want. And Brian Flores' defenses did have those half dollar and dollar packages that most teams don't run. But I digress. So when you think about what the Dolphins need to add, or I guess, you know, the perceived needs, like I always look at the defensive line like this. Start from their base position and then ask yourself, does their game translate more to slide inside or outside? Like Christian Wilkins was unique because he could do a little bit of everything and a little bit of both, I should say. But the truth is that he was a little bit more built, for my money, to play five technique than he was to play zero technique. Five technique is the outside shoulder of the offensive tackle. Your zero technique is head up over the center in the absolute trenches of it all. And I would say that's true of the guys we talked about on Wednesday too, both with Newton and Murphy, because they are also in that 300-pound weight class, and Christian played around 310, 315 most years. But for Murphy, you know, he at 297, he can play zero, which is freaking wild. But think about that role in the Raekwon Davis build, the Raekwon Davis traits. He did play some, you know, obviously one shade comes with zero technique off the outside shoulder of the center, but he did play some two and two eye and three technique, which is all the stuff from the guards in, right? Don't go outside the guards. Besides the three technique is the outside shoulder of the guard. That's the furthest you get in terms of your width in your pre-snap alignment. But he was largely a zero or one technique, and you never saw him ever at the five technique. That's like Tavondre Sweat from Texas. He's not going to play out there. That's like Benito Jones. He ain't going to play out there. But then you've got Neville Gallimore, Jonathan Harris. Those guys are likely to follow that same positional flexibility as a Christian Wilkins. So with all of that in mind, here's what I think you currently have as far as zero and one techniques who can also play the three. It's Benito Jones. He's kind of the only guy. And you really only need one of those guys that's healthy. Raekwon was healthy all year last year because that's typically 300, 400 snaps a year. That's not really worth investing two premium, you know, roster spots into. Like that guy, maybe a practice squad guy and call it good. But then with the various fronts that you can run, the need for the 3-5 technique combination player is much greater. And that's where Gallimore and Harris and Deshaun Hand, all those guys factor in. Then, of course, Zach freaking Sealer does everything and can legit play the 5 technique and the 0 technique and be one of the best in the league in both those positions. And, of course, the unicorn that he is at the 3 technique as well. So I think that if you take Zach's 800-plus snaps from last year, you're looking for collectively around 800 more snaps among the rest of those guys, making it up in the aggregate, right? Unless, of course, you plop another three-down guy in there, which I think both Newton and Murphy are, then that changes your approach. And all of a sudden, you've got a bunch of depth guys that you might not even play this year. But then there's the five techs who also slide out to the 6, 7, and 9 techniques, the wide alignments, Cam Wake's wide 9 technique, where Chubb and Phillip play in the 7 technique a lot. And we have two of those guys in who are unicorns, and then they can rush from the 3 technique and get wins. Like JP has bull rush potential in the 3 technique to run over guards. So can Bradley Chubb. And Shaq Barrett does a bit of that too, but he's mostly an edge guy. And those spots require you to have at least 3 guys that can do some of the heavy lifting with their snap counts. We were at our best last year when we had all Chubb, Phillips, and Van Ginkle, right? And with JP and Chubb's ability to get on the field in that NASCAR package when it's 3rd and 8 and you want to take DTs off the field and get more edge rushers on the field to get after the quarterback, the ability to utilize a lot of fronts like Weaver did in Baltimore, I mean, they ran all kinds of different fronts and brought all kinds of different blitzers. I think the edge is very much in play in round one, and that's without mentioning the injuries that we have going into the year with both 2 and 15. And it's kind of like our offensive line that we have so much flexibility. You could throw Newton, you could throw Murphy, you could throw Latu, Robinson, or Robinson, one or the other, in one bucket and determine who do you like the best in the draft and just take that player and then adopt your deployment accordingly, which we've heard both McDaniel and Weaver talk about doing. So we're up to speed there, right? We understand the basics and the fundamentals and the just overall operation of how that looks. Okay, cool. Let's talk about those three players that I mentioned here and how I stack them. So probably not a surprise if you're an everyday listener that Latu is the top guy of that group for me from UCLA. A pass rush plan of a 5-year veteran. He has counters to his counter moves. He showed them off in Mobile at the Senior Bowl. Tried that spin move that didn't work, but had a seamless counter rip off of it. Speed to power, big enough to hold the point in base versus the run. Felt very good about his ability to drop into coverage as well. To me, he's a top 15 pick, if not for the medical. Probably top 10, if not for the medical. When I compare this player to Jalen Phillips, it's like uniform across the board. It's kind of weird. From his game and the skills to the same college at UCLA to the injuries that the college career almost derailed, the power-speed combination. I'm watching a reel of Latu chop and then angle on a left tackle, then cross face on a center with speed and get them both over their skis and falling on the ground and get sacks on both of those plays. I think that's the kind of player that opens up even more flexibility than what we just talked about because he can really play any spot up front, especially in those nickel rush packages. So right now I take Latu right off the heels of both Turner and Verse. I think he's a future star in this league. Then we get to Darius Robinson from Missouri. And the position flexibility is truly like J.J. Watt-like. And Brett Coleman produced these pass rush win numbers from the 3 and 4 eye technique, that's basically the same spot. It's 3 technique is the outside shoulder of the guard. 4 eye is the inside shoulder of the tackle. So it's like a smidge over, but 13% pass rush win rate from the 5 and 6 techniques. That's a defensive end position, 18.8%. Wider than that, the Cam Wake position, 19.1% efficiency. That's Cam Wake level efficiency, guys. Height, weight, speed guy, 295, 6'5", but the length, man. And we saw the notes that he's very, very well versed in his tactical rush plan. I think he's right behind Latu. I can see the argument that he'd be better than Latu. I really can, but I have him right behind Latu right now. And I can understand, you know, the difference in their skill sets and how that might change for teams, because he has a sack in the game against Tennessee last year where he just drops his face mask into the chest plate of the tackle for a bull rush and walks him across the street to Kansas, you know, opposite Missouri. Then he has the ability to detach, work back upfield, and get the sack on a quarterback trying to step out of that the original edge pressure. Plus, if I need a hard edge set in the run game, Robinson's the one I want doing it. There's an insane length power combination with this player. He took Amarius Mims at Georgia. Are you guys familiar with Amarius Mims? He's like 3,000 pounds. And it looked like he was rushing a ragdoll because he just basically locked on and did what he wanted with him, the push-pull technique, and kind of flopped him around like a ragdoll. Awesome player, 285 pounds. You could do some 3 technique stuff with him as well. He's probably a little more Zach Sealer than he is Jalen Phillips, just in terms of traits and positional preference. And then Chop Robinson, to me, there's a pretty significant gap for me from Chop to the other two guys. I was bigger on him during the All-Star game and combine process, but the tape, there's like lots of him just kind of running past quarterbacks or getting swallowed up. Like the DeJuan Jones tape against Ohio State was not very good. You heard Zuerlein talk about the fact that he's super raw. I don't think that jives with what you want here. I don't think you have time to develop a guy in this particular, you know, window of the Dolphins, whatever you want to call it. Of course, take the best player long-term, but I think that you get that with Robinson and Latu, whereas Chop Robinson, you have to kind of wait for him to come around. Just too many bad reps on tape. So I would kind of veer away from that and go more towards Darius and Latu. Let's go ahead and take our last break right there, come back on the other side, and finish up with the concerns I think that there currently are on the roster and how you might address those. That's next. Draft Time Podcast, your host, Travis Wingfield, brought to you by AutoNation. Third and final segment for the Friday edition of the Draft Time Podcast as we venture into the second week of April and into Masters Week, baby. What do we have? The NCAA Tournament Final Four this weekend. Baseball's off to a rocking start. The uniforms look hilariously bad. The Mariners still can't hit the baseball, and that's where we are. I do want to get back, before I continue this final segment here, to a question that was posed to me from Fins Up Tua on Twitter. Easy enough name, love it. Who asked, since you were asking about the wide receivers today, or talking about, I should say, where do you think Eric Azukama comes into play next season? Love the podcast. Thank you for that, by the way. I do want to start getting more fan stuff on the podcast here. So if you guys reply to me or write a review on Apple Podcasts or whatever it might be, go ahead and do that, and we'll talk about it on the show for you guys here. So this question was posed to me about Eric Azukama, and man, I think he's got a lot of game, man. Like, I thought the role that he was occupying the first couple of games before the neck injury took his entire season away from him last year was one that this offense needed. It was kind of a change up to both run game and pass game in terms of what it looks like for most of the guys that we have in those roles. And I think that he's still a very good route runner. I think he's a yak monster who can produce big after the catch when he gets his opportunities. And he showed the vertical skills in both the preseason and in training camp that we just haven't quite seen yet in the regular season. Now, the first year was all about getting lined up correctly, being a professional. I think there's still some more work to be done there. But I think that Azukama's game definitely translates not just to the NFL, but particularly to this offense and what the Dolphins need beyond both Tyreek and Waddle. So there you go. That's one of my areas of concern, actually. Let's go ahead and just jump in right there. Who is the separator going to be beyond 10 and 17? And I love Odell Beckham's tape. I've talked about him as recently as yesterday on the podcast or Wednesday on the podcast. I think he opens up the flexibility with how you can utilize both Reek and Waddle. He can still gas guys on the perimeter, but has the same pacing and nuance to his routes to win inside. Someone who can be a legit vertical threat on the perimeter that puts the speed of both Reek and Waddle inside. That's what I like about him. I think he gives you a bunch of that, and I think there's in the guys in the draft that could give you that as well. So I like the idea of signing Odell because then I think it opens up the possibility of going O-line, D-line in those first two rounds because I think you're going to have best player available options at those spots with those two groups, and then I think you pretty much knock those out, and it's like, all right, we're ready to play a football game as early as the month of May. So I think that that's a big, big need. I would put it towards one of the top needs on the football team, and if it's not Odell, we've heard about the Tyler Boyd, you know, rumors out there. I don't like that one as much. I'm a big Tyler Boyd fan, but I don't think it fits as well here as what we need. And then I think in the draft, I've talked about it at length, so many options as far as, I think, you know, Malachi Corley, I think, is a better version of Eric Azukama, who hasn't played much in 2 years. Roman Wilson, I think, gives you a lot of this stuff I'm talking about with inside-outside flexibility and vertical threat. Xavier Leggett can just absolutely destroy man coverage. I think he goes off the board in the first round, though. So plenty and plenty of options. It's one of my biggest concerns right now. Who is going to be that separator beyond 10 and 17? And I'll tell you right now, he's not on the roster. That's the fix. It's going to be bringing in somebody new. The next one I have is my interior offensive line size concerned. And I just think that, again, we have the flexibility to go wherever we want because if it's Troy Fatanu, he can play left guard this year and left tackle next year. And speaking of Troy Fatanu, on the Monday podcast, going to talk about trade up and trade down partners and options. And Fatanu is one of the guys I would be targeting in a trade up if I were to do that because there's no way he lasts to pick 21. Just not going to happen. He's too good. But I think that the Dolphins do, if you have a concern on the offensive line right now, it is the size because Aaron Brewer is very undersized at center. And we saw what Connor Williams, kind of how he, there was, you know, certain guys that he went up against last year that he couldn't physically move. And there's some of that on Aaron Brewer's tape as well against guys like John Allen. Like, he can do so much with technique and win so many reps, but there's just those few reps where he can kind of get the best of them because of the size difference there. And then, you know, whether it's Isaiah Wynn, Liam Eichenberg, Robert Jones, there is some size in those positions, but I'm just really curious to see what happens to kind of give you that next starter, because I think that Isaiah Wynn is a very good option at left guard. You probably know you have to count on someone to play at some point for him because he has never finished a season before, but I'm really curious to see what that right guard position looks like. Is there some more size there in terms of who you bring in next? Because the Dolphins could stand to get bigger on the interior, and I think there's one more shoe to fall there on that offensive line group. The next one is something we talked about at length the last couple of days here on the show, is the interior pass rush. Where is it going to be besides Zach Sealer? Because right now, you don't have it. I mean, you're not going to count on Gallimore or Deshaun Hand or Jonathan Harris, or definitely not Benito Jones in that nose tackle position, to be a Christian Wilkins pass rush disruptor. And so maybe it is an exterior, an import, I should say, an outside prospect, Byron Murphy, a Johnny Newton, a veteran signing, whoever that might be. Or there's something else you can do to kind of combat that, and you do run with this rotation of aggregate performers, and you just make it up in different areas because we know we can rush the quarterback off the edge. We have plenty of guys that can play that role, but also get used to more blitzing and more timely blitzing in this defense. You know, Vic Fangio wouldn't blitz. He just wouldn't do it. Occasionally he would, and we get big results out of it. Should have blitzed Herbert a lot more in that Charger game, right? The Chargers got whatever they wanted offensively until it was time. It was nut cutting time, and then you blitz Herbert, and he can't handle it. Big surprise. But I think that you could find ways to get after the quarterback with the penchant that Coach Weaver's defenses in the past that he's been part of have used for timely pressure and blitz looks, whether that's Jordan Brooks, who's the best blitzer we've had at linebacker probably since Carlos Dansby, I would probably say. And then David Long, I think, is probably better than anybody else besides maybe Jerome Baker, who I thought Jerome, you know, as good of a player as he was in certain areas, I thought his skill set as a blitzer was he was just fast. There was no pass rush move there. And that's kind of David Long too, I suppose. And we know this defense has also traditionally found success in blitzing roles for players like Akader Kohu, who got Herbert down on the turf and ended a drive with that blitz rep he had back in week one. Jalen Ramsey can definitely come on the blitz. Kyle Fuller loves to blitz the quarterback. Javon Holland, Jordan Poyer. There's different options to create your pass rush without having, you know, a true defensive tackle winning a pass rush there alongside Zach Sealer. But I always come back to this. Whoever plays next to Zach is going to be a better pass rusher. He just has that impact on guys that he plays alongside. And the last one I have here is the need for a nickel back. And going back to Kader Kohu, I love Kader's game. I think he's a baller. I think he has a long future in this league. Last year wasn't his best year. A lot more zone coverage. That, I don't think, was his game as much. He was really good in the Josh Boyer man coverage defense. Had a kind of down year in the very zone-heavy Vic Fangio defense. But I think that I would not count Kader out in terms of kind of getting back to that rookie year form and playing even better than that and taking his zone coverage up another level and just being a better professional overall. I think that he's definitely got that in his bag. But would I leave it alone with he and Nick Needham? Probably not. And the nice part about this slot position is it goes with the theme of the podcast all week. Some of these position groups are lower valued in the National Football League, and so you can get better players later on in the draft as a result of that. And so I would not be at all shy against the idea of if we move back out of the first or second round and get an additional third or fourth round pick, that's a good area to look at someone like a Mike Sanders still, for instance, from Michigan. Or maybe it's in the fifth round, your original pick, and Shaw Smith-Wade from Washington State, the really good slot cornerback there. So I would not rest on my laurels there. Those are four areas I think we have needs and concerns. Those are four fixes I think I have for those spots in those particular areas of concern. That's my time on the podcast today. Monday, we're going to start the positional preview interviews here for Drive Time. It's going to be all draft content, but like I said, always going to have some Dolphins mix in there as well. Not going to be a straight draft podcast episode ever here on Drive Time, except for the Kyle Crabbs episodes the week of the draft. Those will be strictly draft-centric for your Miami Dolphins. So keep it locked right here. In the meantime, it's going to be my time. You all please be sure to subscribe, rate, review, all that fun stuff. Follow me on social at WinkleNFL, the team at Miami Dolphins. Check out the Fish Tank podcast with Seth and Juice, the YouTube channel for all my free agent acquisition chats on the old YouTubes there, as well as media availabilities and Dolphins Today. And last but not least, MiamiDolphins.com. Until next time, fins up, Carolina Cameron, Daddy.